Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Hey, this is episode 46 of Growth Marketing Today. I'm your host, Ramley John, and I'm here on a mission to help marketers like you sharpen their skills by talking to some of today's top marketing experts. Today, I had the pleasure of talking to Corey Haynes. He is the head of growth at Bayer Metrics. Now, we talk about so much good stuff in this episode. I believe that this is the longest episode of this podcast because we talk about so much stuff and it's so value-packed. We talk about his bottom-up approach to growth, how Corey 2X, how he doubled the trial to paid conversions using personalized videos, why average revenue per user is one of the most important growth levers for SaaS and subscription businesses, and what should new marketing hires do in the first 90 days. He also gave his one advice to marketers, and it's think like founders. I'm so excited about this episode. So much value in this that Corey gives out. I want to thank him for that. In the spirit of always improving and growing, I'm doing something new with this episode. I have created a one-page cheat sheet with actionable growth tips from Corey in this episode. You can download it now at growthmarketing.today/46. It's only going to be up for 5 days. So it doesn't matter if you're getting this episode from Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. Go to growthmarketing.today to download this one-page cheat sheet that will only be up for the next 5 days. Once again, it has the actionable growth tips from this episode. On that page, you'll also get tweetable quotes. There's a lot that Corey gives out. My show notes and also my 3 key takeaways from this episode. If you're new here, please subscribe to wherever you get your podcast. As always, I appreciate it very much. If you leave a review, if it's on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, I'd appreciate a 5-star review so we can reach more marketers with this podcast. Well, I don't want to hold you back any further. Let's listen in on my chat with Corey. Hey, everybody. I have here Corey. He is the head of growth at Bayer Metrics all the way in San Diego. How are you doing, Corey?
Great.
Thanks. I'm so excited to chat with you about a lot of stuff that you're working on. You've been very active on Twitter and also a lot of side hustles that you've been doing. And, you know, before we talk about that, you know, can you tell my listeners and I a little bit about your career journey? You know, how did you go from becoming a youth ministry intern at a church to like becoming head of growth of Bayer Metrics, which is a company that's quite well known in the Twitter realm, also a lot of like entrepreneurs?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for having me on, and excited to kind of tell my story and help out in any way I can. So I'm the head of growth at Bayer Metrics. I've been at Bayer Metrics for about 6 months. So far as of this recording, so it's a kind of a long story going from youth ministry intern at a church to becoming here. And I feel super fortunate. So I'll try to keep it rather brief. The long story short is that in college, I had 2 part-time jobs that I used to kind of survive. And my goal was to get out debt-free. So I had to kind of make ends meet. One of which was the youth ministry intern at the church, because I was always really involved in my church, and it was kind of just like a natural evolution when a position opened up. I was like, well, I could just be here all the time doing these things anyways, or I could be getting paid for it and do more. So it just felt like a kind of a natural fit. And then I also had another job setting up inflatable movie screens in parks and backyards. Basically, I had like my work week was just driving around between classes and church events. The weekends were, you know, driving all over San Diego, setting up screens. And I had like, probably 3 or 4 hours a day on average driving and just listening to podcasts, listen to audiobooks, you know, just going through and listening to other conversations of, you know, podcasts like yours. Mixergy was a huge one. Indie Hackers. I mean, every marketing entrepreneur podcast you can imagine. And then whenever I had downtime, you know, I'd be reading blogs, books, newsletters, et cetera. I was basically just kind of living and breathing everything marketing and entrepreneurship. And then I started in college, I started helping friends and people I knew with marketing. And actually I was an accounting major, and then I realized that like all the time I should have been spent studying for accounting, I was like doing marketing things and thinking of business ideas and helping people, you know, get more traffic to their website. I was like, you know what, I should probably be doing this instead. And so I started really focusing in on marketing and kind of trying to get my hands dirty and really practice more of it. So when it was about time to graduate, about, you know, coming into my last semester of college, I was really excited. I lined up an interview with an Amazon sellers agency here in San Diego. I was really excited about it. I was kind of trying to figure out, okay, what am I going to do? And it seemed like a good fit for me. But long story short, I tried to make it clear beforehand, but apparently I didn't, because he didn't realize that I hadn't graduated yet. And so like 2 minutes into the interview, he hung up on me. I was like, come back later. So I was like, all right, cool. So I went back to class and I Googled best places to work in San Diego. And then I found an internship with another SaaS startup here in San Diego called Cordial. And they actually hired me later that week. And so they had just raised their Series A. I was their first marketing hire. And I was super fortunate to come into that position, just being able to come in kind of on the ground floor. I think I was employee number 11 or 12, technically. And then as we built out the team, as I went full time after I graduated, I had my hands on everything between events, demand gen, copywriting, CRO, product marketing, email marketing, like the list goes on. And I was like a crash course in literally everything. And so it was a really, it was kind of like an entire, I feel like it was an entire like career's worth of experience and lessons wrapped up into like just over a year. And then I started to specialize more kind of in like the content, webinars, email partnerships side as we continue to build out the team too. Okay, so full circle. I had been following Josh for a long time, and because of all my time spent in the car listening to podcasts and reading books, et cetera, hearing kind of the whole SaaS and entrepreneur kind of sphere, Josh and Barometrics was always very prominent. And so when he posted the job, it was sort of a no-brainer, like, oh man, I can't pass this up. Checked all the boxes, there was a lot of alignment between, the open startups. I knew the company really well. It was remote, working with SaaS companies and founders. I mean, it was basically like a dream job. So then I was super fortunate to be chosen for the job. And I think it really just comes down to, we're in a really interesting position as a small bootstrap company. It requires being able to set the vision and strategy as well as being able to execute on it. And a lot of people struggle with kind of one or the other. But being a really lean team, to be able to do both. And so I think it's been a great fit with me and for the company. And it's been a lot of fun.
I have to ask, how did you get that job with the first SaaS company? Because a lot of marketers, especially earlier on in their career, they're like, oh, I'm having such a hard time getting a marketing job. There's so many marketers. And you got the job before you even graduated. So yeah. was there anything you did?
Yeah, definitely. So the job kind of like advertisement was pretty simple. It was basically just email us with your resume and then answer, basically write like a one-page essay on what is marketing. Apparently it was like 1,000 times better than what anyone else has written, although I don't think it was anything special. But he emailed me right back and was like, hey, this is really good. Like the way that you think, do you want to come in for an interview? And on Thursday, it was a Monday, I think that day. And then when I came in, I was able to talk. I think a lot of it comes down to talking really specifically. I was able to say, a lot of the things I had been learning, a lot of experiences I had heard. I knew other companies in the space. I knew like what a Series A was, and I was able to speak really well to just where they were as a company. And so I think that just being able to talk, on the same level as the person that's hiring you, but also just making a good impression, I think, with just being able to write the essay and communicate who you are, what you value, the way you think very well, goes a long way.
And how long did it take you to write the essay? Did you actually like spend some time on it?
I spent the whole class writing it right after I found the job. So about 30, 40 minutes probably.
Oh man, that's funny. It's like, screw accounting, I'm going to get into marketing.
Yep. It was time to graduate and the class could wait.
I want to nerd out on podcasts a bit because I have been listening to a lot of podcasts recently. You talked about Mixergy. Is there any other podcasts you're listening to right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a huge fan of Seth Godin and literally everything that he does and says, and basically like a religious follower of his. So I've been really enjoying his Akimbo podcast recently. And then I'm always heavily kind of in the SaaS sphere of, I've been enjoying a lot of the bootstrap kind of podcasts coming up in the last few months with Founder Quest, Indie Hackers. I still love Mixergy and Andrew, Bootstrapped Web, Scalar Die, the SaaS podcast, How I Built This, Build Your SaaS. I mean, it goes on and on. Founder Chats with Josh, that's his podcast. There's tons of those, but those are the main ones. And then the other ones too, like, I think give a shout out to Everyone Hates Marketers. I love that one with Louis Grenier.
Yeah.
Um, And yeah, those are just a few though. I have like 20 more that I listen to on a regular basis.
That's so good. Yeah, I've been following Build My SaaS as well with, you know, I'm also on the Transistor.fm platform. So I've been listening to those guys quite a bit. Have you listened to Experts on the Wire with Dan Schur? That's a great one for SEO.
I haven't. You know what? I'm going to have to add that to my list.
And maybe you might be interested for this other one. It's called Side Hustle Podcast. I've been following that guy quite a bit. Nick something. I'm sorry if you, Nick, you're listening.
Nick Lopes, I think.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. Yes. Yep. Now, I want to shift gears. Let's talk about growth. Let's talk about Baremetrics. For my listeners who might not know what it is, what is Baremetrics?
Yeah. So at its core, Baremetrics provides what we kind of categorize as revenue analytics and essentially a metrics dashboard for SaaS and subscription companies. And so you can think about metrics like MRR, lifetime value, churn, et cetera. And then we also have a full suite of dunning features to help you to reduce fill charges and delinquent churn. And we call that product recover, as well as another tool to help you learn more about where your customers cancel and then automatically send them personalized emails to win them back. And we call it cancellation insights. So sort of a suite of tools. We have about three right now. And so basically, we provide some of the fundamental tools you need to make decisions and grow the company and kind of track how things are going.
And I know some famous companies are on it, like Buffer, Transistor FM. I believe they're using Baremetrics as well. Are there any other big shot companies that are using it?
Yeah, ConvertKit is one one of the early ones too. Hubstaff. Gosh, I mean, there's so many. Now. We have about close to 800. I wish I'm blanking now on all the different names I can name drop, but those are a few of them.
Yeah, those are big ones, right? A lot of remote companies, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it goes really well, which is kind of, you know, our values and culture, what we kind of believe in, and the community there. So we have a lot of the same sort of bootstrapped or remote or these really close to home kind of companies.
You're talking a lot about values. And one of the things I read on the Baremetrics blog is a thing that you wrote about growth manifesto. I really like it because it just doesn't define growth, what growth means for Baremetrics, but also you wrote down the values that you have for growth at Baremetrics. You know, how do you define growth at Baremetrics and how does your values fit into that definition?
Yeah, that's a good question because I feel like values aren't really talked about enough in marketing and in SaaS entrepreneurship. It's sort of a cliche thing with like CEOs and culture and the whole kind of startup sphere. But with marketing specifically, I think that there's a lot to marketing that has to do with values that people don't even realize, especially things around value prop or just the messaging, the copywriting that you use. In reality, people want to be associated with and work with companies that are like them and not just like them in the way that they look or the way that they talk, but also in the things that they believe in and the things that they stand for. And I think this is something that a lot of like e-commerce companies have really nailed that like this whole kind of SaaS and startup sphere hasn't really gotten yet that we can really learn from the e-commerce space is you have brands built around values, brands that are built around standing up for someone or something, for a cause that's giving back to the world. And somehow those are all very value-based value props for companies and for the brand. And so values were one of the things, you know, I really wanted to focus on as a marketer and that I included in the growth manifesto, because not only does growth have to do with just the strategy or the tactics or the way that we define it, but also the way that we approach all of it. And values is kind of like that fundamental decision-making driver of, do we do this or do we not do this? And then how do we go about doing this? Like, what is the way and the approach that we take to doing these things? To give you a quick definition of kind of what growth is and how we define it, I think I kind of posted it to Twitter, and I think Heaton Shaw really nailed it on the head when he summarized it. He said that growth is doing whatever it takes across departments to help a business grow. And I think it comes back to, like, more and more in the world of SaaS and especially subscription-based companies, we're seeing that departments are converging and the responsibilities between teams are really like overlapping. There's a lot of shared responsibilities between team members and departments and typically what would be very siloed, kind of departments. Like, you have the product team, you have the marketing team, you have the customer success team. Well, and growth, you know, it spans across all those departments and more. But then there's also just a much more, I would say, like a single kind of mind, like a single goal that's behind it. They're not working separately. They're working together on all these things. And so, you know, marketing is very close to sales. Sales is very close to customer success. Customer success is very close to product. Product is very close to growth. They're all very interconnected. And so growth takes a really comprehensive set of responsibilities across the business. But if I had to kind of like, I don't know, summarize or dumb it down, I'd say that it's basically just like a very systematic and data-driven approach to activities that directly impact the growth of revenue, specifically is how I would define it.
And that's true that growth is not siloed anymore. And one of the principles that you put in that guide is that, and quote, I'm quoting this, everything is marketing. Is that what you mean by this, that marketing isn't just the marketing team anymore? It's touching upon all these different departments.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that marketing, again, going back to kind of the differences between SaaS and subscription and other types of companies, is that SaaS and subscription is much more about retention and relationship and the ongoing kind of long-term vision of having a customer with you than, for example, like an e-commerce store or an Amazon, where it's just a one-time transaction. Now, you want to have repeat customers, but you basically, in a SaaS, it's you either keep someone or you don't, and they leave you for someone else. And so every one of us in the company is a marketer, and that we're representing the company. We're talking to customers. We're building a product that's worth talking about, you know, with customer success and support. The way that we answer support, it can be the difference between someone leaving us and someone else staying with us. And so marketing traditionally, right, it's not just about acquisition. It's just about representing the brand and the company in a way that that is good for our customers and that is that's retaining customers as well. So, you know, everything is marketing, and marketing is everything, essentially.
That sounds like a tweet right there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's been at one point or another.
That's true. There's also something you said in a manifesto or blog post that at the beginning, you should not first focus on acquisition, instead focus on something further down the funnel. Is that something that you're seeing what's happening at Baremetrics right now? First time you came in, you focus more on other things other than acquisition.
Yeah, definitely. So, and this is part of actually my kind of genesis into Baremetrics and some of my early conversations with Josh and talking about, you know, like what should the head of growth at Baremetrics do and focus on, and where do you start? And I think there's always a temptation to start with easy early wins or just like trying to get things going. So you're trying to get traffic to the site, you're trying to get leads, you're trying to acquire new customers and build on top of that. But if you don't have a solid foundation to build on, and that foundation being a strong retention strategy, making advocates of your customers and even referrals, monetizing correctly and upselling and having a path to expansion revenue as well. If you don't have all that set in stone, then basically, I mean, all the traffic, all the leads, all the new customers are just going to be lost anyways. It's a fruitless game, right? There's no point in playing that kind of game. So I always advocate for what I call like a bottom-up approach of starting at what's traditionally the bottom of the funnel, or, you know, something like retention, revenue, referral, where it's really about your current customer base and making sure that once someone is a customer, then they're really well supported, well educated, they have all the tools that they need, the product is growing, expanding, meeting their needs every day, you know, there aren't bugs everywhere, there's the right model in place and the right pricing in place as well, you know, that we're treating customers right and we're onboarding them correctly. And then once all that's figured out, then you can go and find new customers, because now you can be confident and trusting in your system that you've set up that they're going to stay, and that all the new customers won't have to be replaced by other new customers next month because they all just kind of filtered out the bottom and were lost due to preventable causes. So that's why I usually, you know, don't focus on the top of the funnel where people mostly start, and traditionally where most marketers start. Again, kind of this is this whole kind of transition from you know, marketing used to be just top of funnel acquisition. Now it's a much more comprehensive set of responsibilities across the business, across departments. And it's just it just takes, you know, like a shift in mindset.
Now, when you started at Baremetrics, where did you put your first effort in? Did you focus more on looking at retention and churn, or were you like focusing on more onboarding?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I looked at both sort of in the same vein. My initial, you know, kind of couple first months were mostly just on customer research, because being Baremetrics, we have all the numbers in front of us. In fact, everyone has all the numbers in front of you. You can go to demo.baremetrics.com to see all of our metrics publicly. So I already knew kind of where things were at, and I had a lot of great data to start with. Where I started with was in the customer research, just to get to know our customers, get to know the customer base, because if I just tried to start figuring out, you know, okay, well, how can we reduce churn? How can we retain more? And I'm just thinking of strategies and tactics without any context of who our customers are and the conversations I've had with them, then it would probably be pretty misguided. So I focused really, really, really hard on a lot of customer research, talking one-on-one with customers, getting to know what are the pain points, struggle points, also getting to know what are the wins and primary benefits, And so that's where I started.
Now, I saw one of your tweets, I think a few weeks ago, where you said like you've sent like X number of personalized videos to free trial users of Bear Metrics. You know, what kind of other growth experiments were you running to increase your free trial to paid conversions?
Yeah, the personalized videos have been a lot of fun. And that was something that actually Josh did about this time last year, but he sort of burned out on a little bit because it just takes a lot of time and attention and it's not very, you know, quote unquote, scalable. But recently what I've been doing is some of the other growth experiments to convert more free trial users is I've been integrating more emails that I'm just asking for a reply and to start a conversation. So instead of just kind of throwing things at people of, here's what it is, and here's how this works, and look at this nice, pretty GIF of, you know, me scrolling through some of the features. It's really just saying, hey, here's the place that we're coming at. Here's the benefits I think that you'll see. And then asking a question, you know, of like, who are you? Like, what's your business? How can we help you? How is everything going? You know, is there any point that's been confusing? Why haven't you converted yet? You know, is there anything we can do that would push you over the edge, or that would, I guess that's maybe not the best analogy, but that would, you know, that would really make this a no-brainer for you. So the replies to emails have been a big one, the personalized videos as well. I've also just been doing more kind of consultations with customers and with trialing users as well. So I'll ask them, hey, can I record, you know, a short video also on your landing page and give you some feedback on your messaging and your copy? I'll basically, can I be a guinea pig in your onboarding flow? I'll sign up for your product. And even though I'm maybe not the target user, you know, I can give you some feedback on how I see things going and show you maybe where it's confusing for me. I'll do a pricing consultation where we can look at your model and look at your churn and everything. And it takes a lot of time, but it's really, really helpful, I think, for a lot of people. And it really expresses also the amount of intent and care and the amount of empathy that we have for our customers.
And that's absolutely delighting them. Imagine getting a video and instead of it being generic, you say, hey, Corey, how are you doing? Here's some things that it can help you out here. And it's really fascinating also that you're going beyond what you do with your tool now. You're actually giving consultation on their website and their onboarding process.
Yeah. And honestly, I wish more people took me up on it because in reality, only a small amount of people do it. But I mean, every day I see people come in, they start a trial, and I'm just hoping that they'll ask me. I'm hoping that they'll say, yes, you know, please do this one because I want to, I'm eager to. And one of the other things that we did too was, we didn't revamp it. We just refreshed our onboarding flow and kind of the sequence and setup pages of starting with Bear Metrics. So one of the things I noticed when we started was that while most of the product had gotten a refresh and Martin, our designer, is, I mean, absolutely fantastic and just a genius at this stuff, but the onboarding flow was a little bit neglected and a little bit outdated. And so that was one of the first things they did as well, was just saying, hey, let's take a fresh set of eyes on with someone, especially, you know, me being new and I hadn't signed up for Bear Metrics yet. I just recorded myself, you know, thinking as a software founder and with an account, you know, I'm signing up for our own product. I'm taking note of where the points are that are confusing, the things that aren't being communicated well, the things that can be improved or that I'd like to see or expect to see. And we went through tools like Hotjar and Full Story, and we looked at, you know, where people were rage clicking, where people were confused, where people were dropping off. And then we set up an entirely new process, and I'm really proud of kind of where that's at today.
You know, what kind of results did you see from all this effort that you put in, not just revamping the onboarding, but the personalized videos and also offering to consult for not just their website? You know, what kind of results are you seeing now in terms of free to trial paid or any kind of other results?
Yeah, so our kind of trial conversion stage, we've seen that improve from probably, I don't know, there's a little bit of seasonality too, and obviously there's so many other factors that go into it, but from what we've seen, you know, our trial to conversion rate has improved maybe by about double, I would say. Wow. From about, I don't know, 5%, I would say maybe from like 5 to 6% on average to maybe 8 to 10% now on average. But we're seeing also that anyone who I'm really interacting with, making a personalized video for, the landing page review, et cetera, they're about 3 times more likely to convert. I think, and that also might be due to like the fact that they are more engaged with me and that they were maybe more likely to convert in the first place. But nonetheless, those are the kinds of results we're seeing. And also on the churn side, I mean, we've done an amazing job, really proud of our team on just being able to reduce churn in the last few months. We were hovering around, you know, between 5 and 7%. Now on average, we've been between 2 and 4%, I would say. And so I think that also kind of goes as a testament to the level of care and intent that we have for our customers.
I'm going to jump on the churn, how you got that churn so low in a bit. I want to kind of dig a little bit deeper into what the videos you're creating look like. How long are they? Do you name drop Do you drop the person's name as often as possible so that they feel it's personalized? How do you send it over to them? All that stuff. How do you do that?
Yeah. So a few days into the trial, I send an automated email through Intercom out asking if I can, basically just says, hey, I'm trying out this thing. It's really simple. I'm just want to basically make you a short recorded video of me giving you a demo using your own account, using your own metrics. And I basically say, if you're interested, just reply yes. I just need your permission to do that, and I can send it right back to you. So if they say yes and reply yes, then they usually make about a 10-minute video using Loom. So I'll just go into their account, like impersonate basically on kind of our back end. I'll use Loom to record using their own metrics. And it'll just give them like a brief product tour of hitting some of the major kind of benefits. I'll look at their metrics and I'll talk through kind of some of the things that I'm seeing, or, you know, ways that they could use Barometrics to improve their metrics, or where they should be looking in the first place. And then I will, save it. I'll put a password on it. That way no one's able to get into it. And I'll send it back to them. And I just say, hey, here's the video. Let me know what you think, and if there's any other way I can be a resource for you, please let me know. And I send it back, and, usually we'll maybe chat a little bit more about what I saw, or if there's any other questions they had about it. You know, it's a good way to sort of spur some conversation, and it gives them a good opportunity to not feel like I'm going to bug them with, sending in a chat request or a support request or whatever it was, but now it's a little bit more easy for them to maybe, ask questions challenging me, like, I'm not really understanding this, or how are you different from X competitor, or, what are the other ways you guys doing this, or I'm struggling to figure this out. And so it's a good way to surface some of maybe those deeper things that are going on in the back of their head that they maybe wouldn't otherwise bring up.
How many percentage of the free trials are saying yes to requesting the video?
Let's see.
Just ballpark.
I mean, I make about probably on average about 10 a week. And so, to be honest, I don't even know what the percentage is. I'm not sure how many of those are actually, because we have a lot. I mean, there's a lot of, one of the things we're trying to work through right now is like qualifying our leads more, because right. We have a lot of like test accounts or people like spammers that are just kind of like trying to, fill our trial. I'm sure everyone else has experienced this too. But I wouldn't be able to give you like a hard and fast conversion number.
Now, this aligns with what Paul Graham says, they do things that don't scale, especially early on. Have you started thinking about how you're going to automate or scale this in the future? Are you going to hire some folks from Philippines or, what is your plan for scaling this? If it's like, yeah, this is really improving our free to paid trial, how do we scale this up?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a hard one because I don't know if we really need to scale it, to be honest, because it's a lot of the insights and like the relationship that I build with customers through this is really kind of, I don't know what I would do without it sometimes. I'm really glad that I have the context where I know them. I've seen their metrics. I've talked to them before, or now that I'm actually going through, looking at their metrics, where they're at. Then later on, I might have some sort of thought about like, I came across them again, or saw them on Twitter, or they just launched something, and now I can go ask them again and how things are going, or if they've, implemented this growth strategy I recommended. I've been tempted to think about how I can scale it, because to be honest, it gets a little tiring sometimes going through the exact recorded video that you make for a different person every single time. I literally do it in my sleep now. But I haven't really thought about how to scale it, to be honest.
I don't have an idea on also how to scale it. Maybe not scaling it is what's really causing the conversion to go up, because it's delightful, right? It's something that it's unexpected, and it's something that, customers, would love to see, I think.
Yeah. Actually, I had someone chat in the other day, and after I sent them the video, it was a couple of days they hadn't responded, and he just responded back. He's like, wow, I didn't actually think that you would do this. Thank you. It's like, wow, we've really like set the bar very low to just, make one personalized video for someone. I think that kind of personal touch does go a long way and kind of helps us set ourselves apart.
I think the problem is for marketers, sometimes we start off by trying to automate things too early.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's always a temptation to, as soon as, even before you see something working, it's how can I make this scale, and what's our plan for continuing to do this for 3 months? How are we going to build it and measure it? Just start doing it. And then if it starts working, then you can figure out how to scale it. Even now, I've been doing this for almost 7 months of just making these personalized videos. I started doing them from day one since I started, and I'm still tempted to try to figure out how to scale it. But I feel like it's sort of a natural thing you have to push back. Just let it go for a little bit longer. Maybe there's something I'll figure out where it'll make my job a little bit easier, but maybe also it's never meant to be scaled.
That's a good way to put it. I want to shift gears to the churn, and you said you were able to bring it down to less than 2% or 2-3% from 5 to 7.
Probably a 2-4% on average month to month.
That's absolutely great. Like, what kind of experiments did you and your team run to get such great result with churn? Because that's really, really good. It's below average from industry wise.
Yeah, it's definitely below the industry benchmarks, which is also another great feature that we have to kind of rely on, so we can see a lot of the context into the metrics that we're looking at. And to be honest, I can't take a lot of credit for that number, because I think that it's been a whole kind of team effort. It's not just me and like as the growth person of like, these are my metrics and I own them and I'm solely responsible for them. You know, Aaron, our customer success lead, is fantastic at building personal relationships with customers. And she also, several months ago, introduced sort of a plan and a strategy for us all, for the whole team, to do more support and to essentially share kind of the burden of answering tickets, you know, talking to customers, responding, going through tickets, and going through and, you know, logging and fixing bugs as well. So it's been all of us, you know, the product team, even our designer, Martin, is going through support tickets and he's helping out. He's talking to customers. He's even answering questions for me about, you know, pricing sometimes or, you know, discounts, things like that. But I think that's been one of the big differences for us, is just being very intentional as an entire team to sit down and focus on, you know, let's go through this together. Like, we're not just going to figure out, you know, what's the next feature we can build, or what's the next, you know, thing or experiment we can run that's going to reduce churn. It's really just taking a hands-on approach for all of us and just putting in the time and effort with our customers, having a fast response time, fixing bugs, you know, building features that are being requested, you know, going through. And I mean, there's so much in just being able to respond in a timely manner and then ask someone, and really dig in. You know, when they say, hey, this thing is missing, and or do you have this thing, and or is, you know, this thing isn't working for me, and then you really dig in, you take the time to understand their process and how things are set up for them and what they're trying to achieve, you might even find out and just kind of tell them, hey, actually, maybe there's this other way that you should be doing this. Here's how we think about it, and this is why it's set up this way. So you don't actually need to go and do these things. It's actually, you know, it's correct. You don't need to, you know, this isn't a bug or this isn't a feature that you need. And they might say, oh, awesome. You know what? Like, I was about to cancel, or I was about to go look for something else, or I wasn't really getting it or grasping it. But now that you explained it that way, or now that you took the time to talk to me, now I understand. And there's a lot of opportunity there with just people. You have to surf it. So you have to dig it out of people. So I would say that's what I would attribute to kind of the reduced churn to, is just taking a very company-wide comprehensive approach for all of us digging in and saying, how can we help our customers?
I like how you're looking at it from a team perspective, and right, churn is should be owned by the whole team. And just talking about benchmark, another thing that you can do with Bear Metrics is you work with and talk with hundreds of SaaS companies and even subscription companies, and you can even see their own metrics. You know, what kind of trends and patterns are you seeing this past few years, and where do you see it going?
Yeah, it is really interesting. I feel super fortunate to talk to so many amazing founders and companies and be able to kind of get the inside scoop on what they're going through and where they're at. Some of the trends and patterns I see, I would say one of the ones, I don't know, maybe it's just not talked about as much, or maybe there's isn't enough kind of being strategized about it, but I always see average revenue per user is like such a critical metric for companies to focus on and to really dig into. I think most people see it as just like sort of a lagging indicator. It's like a reflection of what's happening. And that's true, that it is a lagging indicator, and that it's just telling you, you know, what's already happening. It's just making a, you know, a basic calculation for you. But no one's really talking about how to track and improve your average revenue per user, how to increase your average revenue per user. Sure, there's the, you know, the charge more advice, or there's the, you know, change your model or pivot advice, but no one's really thinking about how can we strategically not just milk our customers for more money, or just double our prices, or just, you know, charge them overage fees or things like that, but how to really align ourselves so that our customers can grow with us and our average revenue per user will continue to increase over time. And the other part of that too is because average revenue per user is so closely tied to your other two most important metrics, which are lifetime value and churn. Average revenue lifetime value is literally a product of average revenue per user and your churn rate. And so you increase your average revenue per user, you increase your lifetime value,
right,
but you'll also likely decrease your churn. You know, with a very, and it makes sense when you think about it from a user's perspective, but if you have a product that you're only charging, let's say $9 a month for, The switching costs of switching from one $9 a month product to another is very easy, right? It's just sort of like rip and replace normally. I'm just kind of making some generalized terms here. But if you're paying $9,000 a month, then that's going to be a very big decision to make, right? It's going to be a very long, lengthy process. Like you're not even paying monthly, you're paying annually. So you're probably paying, you know, $81,000 a year or $80,000, whatever it is. And so increasing your average earner per user usually always is guaranteed to improve your metrics across the board. MRR, net revenue, lifetime value, churn, quick ratio, everything is so closely tied to average revenue per user. Especially having that path to expansion revenue as well gives you a leg up on everyone. Builds for a really healthy company. I'll just say the one other kind of trend and pattern I've been looking at, I've just been seeing, is that there's a lot of opportunity to learn from your canceled customers.
Right.
And no one's really talking about that part of customer research. It's the part of customer research that everyone leaves out because it's the icky part, right? Going and talking to your customers who, you know, who maybe left you a bad word or who just canceled out of nowhere, you know, the big customers who left and really made a dent in your MRR and your churn. But there's so much to be learned there. There's so much. If you can just take the time to understand why someone would leave, the feedback that they have for you, what it is, what are the trends and patterns across those people who are canceling? I mean, there's just a gold mine in there, you know, of research and insights that you can gather to improve your product, improve your marketing, improve your positioning, improve the way that you onboard and educate your customers. And I think that there's a lot of opportunity there. I mean, it's a huge, you can have a huge leg up if you're taking the time to understand why customers are canceling.
Is that something you've been able to do with Bear Metrics? I know it's always hard. Somebody cancels and you send an email, hey, can I get you on a phone call or something to find out why? Did you find any other better strategies to get research on canceled customers? Do you offer them something? Hey, you know, you canceled. Can I give you $50, $50 Amazon gift card or something to jump on a call?
Yeah, it's difficult, you know, like, I don't want to kind of toot our own horn or get too like self-promotional here, but Cancellation Insights is one of the features that we built actually just sort of recently, like basically right before I came on board, where basically when someone goes into their settings or their billing or whatever kind of it is, and then they click the button to cancel their account, or maybe even just to request a cancellation, like, you know, they can't cancel on their own. They have to talk to a customer support rep or an account executive or something like that. Then we actually serve a form that asks them why they're canceling. They can choose a reason. They can add in some additional context in like a comment box. And then we're gathering all that information. They're aggregating it and putting it into some pretty, you know, graphs and charts for you to be able to see and visualize. But then afterwards, we're sending them an email. This is kind of where I come in too, is, you know, someone cancels, they might say, you know, it's too expensive, or we're switching to a competitor, or there's technical issues, or maybe shutting down the company, all these different kinds of reasons. And I'm sending a personalized email to them. I think that's one of the big, I mean, the two parts there, right? Yeah, collecting feedback in the cancellation process is by and far the most effective way to get the most feedback, but also to get the best feedback, because it's not, you know, days or weeks later after they canceled. And that might give you kind of a half-hearted answer of, well, you know, it just wasn't a good fit, or this other company offered us a great deal, or, you know, you don't have this feature. We really need that feature, when in reality it has nothing to do with the features. But in the process of someone canceling, it's very fresh on their mind, right? They know specifically why they're canceling, and now they're going and acting on that reason. And then the second part of that too is that usually there's just an automated email afterwards that goes out, or maybe there's nothing in place and people aren't even reaching out, and they're just saying, "Hey, saw you canceled. You know, would you mind telling me why? You know, it would be really appreciated." I mean, it doesn't really give a lot of reason for someone who just canceled to now answer your email about why they just canceled. It's but having a personalized email based on the reason why they said, you know, looping in the exact words that they use goes a long way getting a response. But then also what I'll do is we don't like, I mean, I don't have like a one size fits all approach for trying to get a customer back. I really just want to understand why. What is the deep reason? And even if we don't get them back, at least I have that feedback. But normally it comes down to, you know, something that was missing or something that wasn't done or some sort of mismatch in the way that they want to work that we wanted to work. And then if there is an opportunity, I'll say, hey, you know, can we give you a month free? Can we, you know, maybe they're really tight on money or they're going through some financial struggles. Hey, we would love to help you out and give you, you know, 50% off for a couple of months or something. You know, basically it's just me understanding what the reason is and then giving kind of a personalized, curated kind of offer to them based on that reason why they said.
That's interesting because last month I have Adobe subscription so I can get Photoshop, Premiere, Illustrator, all that stuff. It's like $50, $60 a month. And I was about to cancel and then they did exactly what you said. They had a cancellation form. I said it was too expensive and they were like, oh, it's too expensive. Can we offer you 2 months for free before you leave? And I was like, what? Yeah, I'll take you up on that offer. And then I'm thinking in my head, hopefully I can, you know, start doing some side projects that can make up for this payment.
Yeah. That's like the, I think, I don't know who was the first to do that. I mean, they're probably one of the first, but Amazon and Audible, you know, if you go to Audible, you try to cancel your account. I've done this many times. They're like, are you sure you want to get, they'll take you through like 10 screens of like, are you sure? Here's 2 months free. Here's 3 months free. Can
right.
Like, I don't know, send you a Lexus now. Like they'll just do anything to keep on their account. The only thing about that though, is that let's say that you do give them 2 months free, or maybe you give them a month free, or maybe it's even 3 months free. After the 2 months come, if you haven't done anything and you're still not finding value out of the product, you're just going to cancel again anyways. So that specifically, it might be a little bit, that strategy might be a little overhyped. I don't know how well it's working for them. I think it's important to really, again, understand the intent of why is someone canceling. Is it really that it was too expensive or that you weren't actually using it?
Getting the value, you're right. I want to take a step back. And you were hired as a first marketer at Baremetrics. That, you know, Baremetrics has been around for 5 years at that point. You actually gave an amazing workshop with, I forget the funnel, about acing your first 90 days as a marketer at a SaaS company. And that workshop was great. Checked it out. It was great. Can you give a brief overview of what you did in your first 90 days at Baremetrics?
Yeah, totally. I mean, naturally, like coming into, like I said, it was like a dream job for me. I really wanted to do, come in and do a good job of coming and starting the right place, and especially coming into more of like a autonomous sort of leadership role too. You know, it was a step up for me in my career as well. So I wanted to make sure that I was, you know, coming in with the right place. So I had an advantage coming in, and so I'll kind of give some of like what I would have done if I didn't, but I was already super familiar with Baremetrics because it's very well known in the SaaS space and I've been following for a long time. Right. I had read basically every one of Josh's blogs. I had, you know, listened to every one of his podcast episodes. So I knew him really well, right? If I didn't, I would read up and I'll do as much research beforehand, even before I started, of where the company's at, what's been done, you know, what are all the blog posts, what is every tweet. Like, look through everything that you possibly can, because it'll just give you one step ahead. But even before I started, one of the things I did was I met with some other marketers who had done something similar, you know, in starting as maybe marketer number one, or building out a team, or just coming in from the ground up in early stage, or even just being, you know, a marketer for a bootstrapped company. I just asked advice, you know, if I could, basically, what would they do if they were in my shoes? And so I got a lot of great advice from some really smart people in the space. But then when I actually started, I kind of planned and broke out my time into 3 months in the first 90 days. So month one was really focused on getting to know the people and the company, the way that people worked, you know, who's responsible for what, also becoming an expert in the product and the roadmap. I think that's another thing maybe that marketers should focus on and learn more about how to do, is like how to actually use your own product and you know, things like doing support like really helps that. And then three, doing a lot of customer research. And so most of my time in the first month was doing one-on-one customer interviews over phone, like over Zoom, you know, showing my face and we're talking for 30, 40 minutes, sending out a survey, doing a lot of customer support, and even just reading through all the past support tickets. And then looking back through all the old conversations that we've had, you know, I can go through all of Slack and email. I can see, you know, a lot of previous things that were done. Month two was about kind of distilling everything that I was learning in the customer interviews and the research, in the survey and the support tickets, et cetera. And then using that information to kind of pave out the path before me in the coming months, right? Identify a path forward. Where can I make the most impact? What are the things we need to work on? Right? This is a great time to brainstorm and forecast, set goals, start figuring out what to do with all this information. And then month three was when I was starting to do kind of my first projects, get some early wins. You're starting, like I said, from the bottom up, and retention and revenue was making, you know, tweaks to the pricing. We made a new pricing page. I was looking at our whole kind of onboarding strategy. I was talking to Aaron, our customer success lead, about, you know, why are customers leaving? Who's our best customers? What are the, you know, some other ways that you would like to do this? How can I take more work off of you so that you can spend more time with customers? And so I was kind of trying to take that off of her. And so then that, you know, that last month was really just starting to do all those things. There's a balance between, you know, you want to start off doing, like, basically you're not going to like do anything to help the company for about like a month or two, because you're just doing a lot of research, but then you want to like really quickly jump in and just start doing stuff. There's even a temptation early for me, where I was like, you know, I want to do this and that and these, which are all like these really big projects, but it's like, you know, we really need to know what's working. We need things that are going to have a shorter feedback loop that we're going to be able to see if it's working or not. And so you basically want to get some quick wins in that third month. And so, yeah, that's kind of how I approached my first 90 days.
And how was your communication with Josh in the beginning? Like, were you doing weekly one-on-ones? Like, how is he keeping you accountable through the first 2 months when you were just doing research?
Yeah, so we were probably hopping on the phone, yeah, every week. I was basically, you know, sending him Slack messages, asking questions every day, like throughout the day. But he's really great about giving a lot of autonomy, letting people make decisions, letting people work through stuff. He's also great at kind of like sending things over. You know, he'd send me something like, hey, you know, look through this. Here's another story of another founder, or here's something I've been thinking about, or just kind of jotting down a lot of notes. And so, yeah, our communication was pretty much every day.
And how did you track all this knowledge? Like, you did all this research, you talked to all customer success and product. Did you put it in a Google Doc and you were just keeping track through that, or were you using Basecamp? Like, how were you keeping track of the things that you were learning?
Yeah, it's funny because I had been using them before I even came to Barometrics, and I love them. I use them for everything. But we use Notion for everything at Barometrics. And now Notion is becoming sort of like a meme now, because it's like the whole, like, if you're a Notion user, you're like a vegan, you just like can't stop telling everyone about it. But so I feel bad from even mentioning, but I mean, it's fantastic. So I was keeping everything in Notion. I have like my whole kind of growth page, which is then like the library for all the different other pages I have. So I have, I have the recordings of customer interviews, I have the survey results, I have, you know, sheets and tables of feedback. I have, you know, other thoughts of what we're doing. And then I have like everything distilled into one document of the who, where, what, and why, you know, who our customers are and what the value is they get from us, positioning, messaging. But we keep it all in Notion.
Yeah, I recently switched to Notion after getting frustrated with Evernote and how everything is all over the place. So I've used Notion now for my personal notes as well. Now, I just want to shift gears one more time. You know, you recently launched a new project, HeyMarketers.com. I've been following that. You launched it on Product Hunt. I voted it up. You know, what is that all about, and where do you see that going?
Yeah, so I was talking with another founder another time, just about, because he was basically like, hey, can I, you know, I saw the work that you're doing at Barometrics. Can I ask you some questions about, you know, hiring a growth marketer early on, because they were just about to hire their first marketer. So I was like, sure, you know, and actually they were previous Barometrics customers. I was like, why don't I ask you some questions and then you can ask me some questions too. We'll do kind of like a swap. But anyways, what we, during the conversation, you know, he was trying to figure out what it is that I do, you know, the job advertisement, job opening, kind of what the responsibilities are, who is it, what kind of person, you know, would be best fit for this job, and then where do they go promote it? And so I was talking to him about, you know, kind of some of the remote job boards and, you know, other places that I might find jobs. He's like, well, it's actually an in-house position. And I sort of realized that maybe there wasn't a great fit for just marketing jobs especially in the tech and the SaaS and the e-commerce space. And so in our conversation, he was like, you know, this seems like a real, like, if I had time, I would probably do this myself. I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to do it. Like, give me 2 weeks and I'll come back to you. So I went, and over the weekends, I just built it out, you know, basically just hacked it together with some no code tools. And so yeah, it's a job board specifically for marketers in tech, SaaS, and e-commerce. It's just been a lot of fun. Yeah, I mean, I've just been kind of putting it together and slowly but surely, and it's just a side project, but helping more marketers find their next great career opportunity.
Cool. And you said you use some no code tools. I think I read somewhere you use Webflow. Like, any other particular tools that you use to put that together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Webflow is fantastic. I love them for literally everything. And I also had together with Typeform, Google Sheets, and then Zapier are kind of the main four. And they use ConvertKit as well for like the newsletter and automating some things, and Zapier for like social media posts too, and still kind of putting it all together. But those are the main four: Zapier, Webflow, Typeform, and Google Sheets.
Are you monetizing this right now? I noticed you had some affiliate links. Also, you're charging, you're offered to charge whatever people were willing to pay to post a job on Hey Marketers.
Yeah. So I mean, everything's an experiment, right? So I just figured, why not try some affiliate links? Because this might be a better way than like having people post like advertisements or, you know, banner ads. And but I also just wanted to see maybe if it would work and if it'd be helpful just to kind of surface some more maybe lesser known tools. And then, yeah, for the actual job posting, I'm running like a pay what you want model, because I didn't think it was fair to just start with, you know, like some of the job boards are charging $300 for their posts. Well, I'm just starting out. I'm not going to charge $300, but I'm not also not just going to charge $10, because I want to know what it's worth to people. And so pay what you want just allows people to say, here's how much I'm willing to pay, you know, to kind of risk for posting it here. It gives me a lot of great data. It makes people feel good about the price that they're paying. And then ultimately it gives me a good idea of what I can charge later on. But especially in the early days, you know, I'm still getting traffic, still getting subscribers. It's increasing every day. You know, I felt that it was important to have a more flexible pricing plan for people.
Do you have any other side hustles that you're working on? And this, and along with Baremetrics, is the only one that's keeping you busy, other than your podcast?
Yeah, I have a few. So I have a couple non-sleazy affiliate sites that I'm kind of testing with a friend. They're not in any weird spaces or for any like crazy products. I also run a meetup here in San Diego called Indie Hackers for San Diego.
Oh, cool.
So sort of the Indie Hackers ambassador and building a great community here. I run another podcast with a friend. It's just a side project that we do on Tuesday nights called Cultivate and Keep. And but yeah, I mean, otherwise, those things keep me busy for sure. But most of my time is spent with Baremetrics.
Nice. Yeah, that's definitely keeping you busy. I've listened to a few Indie Hackers podcasts there. It's pretty good. I highly would recommend it.
Yeah, it's great.
I'm about to wrap up. I have two more questions. I mean, what would be your advice for any marketers who's early in their career? Is there one advice that you would give to folks who might just be starting out, or maybe they're in the middle of their career and they want to transition to something else?
Yeah, I would say think like a founder. And even like not just as a founder, literally, but think more entrepreneurial, right? Think, put yourself in the place of an owner or in the place of you and your boss, right? At the end of the day, companies want revenue. People are accountable for results. And no matter what position you're in or what level, think in terms of like, what is the result, end result of this? How does this result in revenue? It's really easy to get wrapped up in vanity metrics or, you know, even just looking like you're doing a good job, just like keeping busy. But when you think like a founder, right, there's no waste of time, right? There's no questioning, like, is this thing good? Is this thing bad? So we're spending our time on this. It forces you to think on another level and really get serious about what you're doing. And it's okay. Like, I think it helps too, because you can come and you can say, hey, look, we wrote these, and we've spent the last, you know, 2 months writing these 6 blog posts, and nothing's really come out of it. We haven't really seen our free trials increase. Maybe we should spend our time elsewhere. And instead of spending another, you know, 8 months or 10 months writing more blog posts that aren't going to do anything, and then you're going to look bad in the end, now you're kind of you're being proactive and you're taking it back to them. You're saying, hey, look, I don't think this is going to work. How about I try and experiment with some other things? And now you get the opportunity to go and kind of pave your own way, experiment with more things, show, you know, and now you're showing that you're not just thinking, how can I do my job? You're thinking, how can I help the company? Other thing too is, I mean, just learn and soak up as much information as you can from as many people as you can. You know, learn from marketers in other industries, get virtual coffee with founders and marketers, listen to podcasts, read books, constantly be challenging yourself to learn more, to learn different skills, different areas. I think there's also a temptation to, you know, well, I'm a content marketer. This is the thing that I do. I write blog posts and that's it. It's like, how about, you know, what if you learned how to run podcasts, or what if you learned how to do webinars? What if you learned how to do some, you know, some demand gen, some paid advertising too? The more skills you can acquire, the better, as long as you know what you're strong at. But you might find that you really like something that you never thought that you would. And also, you know, especially for marketers early in their career, challenge yourself to go for jobs that you may not necessarily be qualified for. You know, there's always sort of a fear, right, of, well, what if I get this job and then I have no idea what I'm doing and I just flop and fail miserably? well, that could happen, but then also you could just go back to another job that you are qualified for and build yourself up again. There's really not, like, what's the worst that can happen? Someone once told me, if you only did what you're qualified for, you'd still be, sweeping the trash or flipping burgers, right? Everyone ends up doing things that they're not qualified for. There's nothing wrong with challenging yourself and learning to do new things, right? It's just kind of the natural evolution of yourself and of your career. So push yourself to just go for stuff maybe that you don't think that you're qualified for, because you might find that you actually are, and that you weren't giving yourself the benefit of the doubt.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for that. Where can people find you? What is your call to action for any of my listeners right now?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to experience the personalized demo and you want to get to know our onboarding flow, I challenge you to go sign up for a free trial of Barometrics. Barometrics.com. Now, in all seriousness, if you want to go learn more about us, basically everything you need to know is on barometrics.com. You can find me on Twitter at Corey Haynes CO. Those are great ways to get to know who we are and follow along.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it, Corey.
Thank you, Romney. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, thanks for listening in on this episode. Oh my goodness. I was listening in on this episode and editing it, and I was just like, wow, there's so much good stuff. Literally, I have like 5 or 10, I forget, quotes from this episode, and I have created them because I couldn't stop how much value Corey gave away here. You can get that at growthmarketing.today/46046. And as always, I want to give you my 3 key takeaways from this episode, which you can also get on that page. First, approach growth from a bottom up. Don't jump into trying to acquire new users right away. It's so tempting as marketers to try to get new leads, try to get new users on our website. But what Corey said is, what's the point of trying to get new users? All too often, it costs quite a bit of money to acquire those users. If your funnel is leaking, they're gonna end up leaving your app anyway. So look at from the bottom, your retention, look at your referrals, look at your trial to paid conversions. Are they activating? And finally, that's when all of that looks good, then you can double up on acquiring new users. Second thing is, be human with your marketing. One thing that Josh Pigford, the CEO of Barometrics, did that Corey started doing was creating personalized videos to provide growth tips beyond just getting trial users to adopt Barometrics. Corey genuinely wants to help users out. He offered free feedback on landing page, onboarding, and pricing model that's totally beyond his job. I think people can smell when people are trying to be fake and trying to sell you something to people who actually want to help you succeed. So be human, be real, and be helpful. Finally, think like a founder. Corey's one advice to marketers is to put yourself in the shoes of the founders and think more entrepreneurial. What keeps them up at night? Are they worried about revenue? Are they worried about churn? What are they worried about right now? And help them out with that. Sometimes it's easy to get caught up with different metrics that we lose focus of the bigger picture, which the CEO or the founder is really caring about. That's my 3 key takeaways. In the spirit of improving and growing, this is about growth marketing. I also believe growth marketers have to grow themselves. I'm trying to grow this podcast. I'm doing something new, and I have created a 1-page cheat sheet with all the actionable growth tips that Corey gave out in this episode, which you can download only for the next 5 days at growthmarketing.today/046. So get it there now before that 5 days runs out. Now, if you're new here, please subscribe to wherever you get a podcast. I have some amazing episodes that's coming up. I posted it up on Growth Market Today. I posted it up on Twitter. I have some 7 valuable great marketers who are giving some value to this podcast. And as always, keep on growing.